Hey, welcome to the Killer Frogs, the podcast all about TCU athletics from the fans' point of view. My name is Sean Fouché, and this is episode 210 for Friday, September 27th of 2024. And on this week's podcast, let's welcome Nathan Hernandez. How you doing, Nathan?
I'm good. I've mentally checked out of work because I'm excited to leave for Kansas City. So
yeah, you leave tomorrow, don't you?
Yeah, like 12 o'clock.
Yeah, that'll be a fun trip. Do you think they'll have a contract signed with Arrowhead by the time you get there?
I'm going either way, so I've got a tee time on Sunday, so
well, there you go.
Either way, I'm having a weekend.
He's going for golf, but he's staying for football. You know, that's a great plan. Also on this week's podcast, we have everyone's favorite punter from down under, Jordy Sandy. How you doing, Jordy?
I'm all right. I'm hanging in there. Yeah. My couple of football teams aren't going so well, but we'll be okay.
And which couple of football teams would that be?
Dallas Cowboys. Okay. Kind of letting us down a little bit. And then
there's the answer to number two.
And then one a little closer to home for me. Yeah. So I'm sure we'll get into that.
Did you end up going to SMU?
I did. I went to SMU for the first half of the game, and it was
just for the first half, though.
Yeah, it was honestly the weather was horrible. Like, it was so hot and there's no shade in that stadium. It was rough.
So what made you leave more, the results of the game or the stadium?
Answer that? I mean, I feel like it was a mixture of both. We saw a punt return to the house. It's never good, so it was like, it's time for me to leave.
Yeah, there's always something that makes people want to leave SMU, and last year it was lack of water, or 2 years ago it was lack of water, and I know that they had a big press release about trying to bring in thousands of extra bottles of water, but as a lot of people were saying, like, that's probably not even going to be enough given the fact that, you know, the heat and the number of people that were supposed to be there for the first half. So, yeah, game day is always rough at SMU, no matter however you slice it. And, of course, we're going to talk about the game here in just a little bit, but we also want to welcome from TCU Horned Frogs on SI, so I'm going to get this right, Nick Geramonte. Nick, how are you doing?
I'm doing good. Just, you guys touched on it. Football's, you know, coming off that SMU game wasn't great, but I'm excited to be here, and we got a lot of other cool sports to look at, so I'm excited to get this thing going.
Yeah, for those of you who remember or follow along with the other podcast, Nick actually is great at covering basketball, both men and women's, and so he's going, football sucks, so we're going to talk basketball today. Of course, unfortunately, we do have to revisit the 66-42 loss to SMU, losing the iron skillet this year. We have one more chance to win it back next year, but guys, this was a bit of a heartbreaker. This team got beat on both sides of the ball, up and down the field. It's an issue. It's a problem that we're going to have to figure out how the coaches are going to address. But let's kind of get into this. Let's rip the Band-Aid off, get this over with as quickly as we can. Nathan, let's start with you. And before we get into the bad stuff, was there anything you saw on Saturday that was worth talking about, a positive, something redeeming from what we saw on Saturday? Should I insert cricket noises here in the podcast?
Probably. I mean, I can't really say I was upset. Not as upset as I was for UCF, because obviously I've said this many times, I would rather get blown out than lose a close game, because close games insinuate that it was winnable, you were there, it was just out of your reach, if you fix a few couple plays, you're good. This game was just, from the beginning, I just kind of went numb. Like, I mean, we talked about it right before the podcast. You know, you get the should have been fumble, ruled forward progress. They went out and got 3 points. Then they scored another touchdown. And then we had the Hoover fumble on
scoop and score.
The fumble, with quotation marks, because I don't think it was a fumble. I think he regained possession.
Well, let's talk about that for a moment, because you have a bit of a – it was an option. Hoover goes to pull it, loses control of the ball, but it looked like he kind of regained control before he went.
Yeah,
down.
So I think, and from what me and Patrick saw while we're watching it from home, that he regained control against his shoulder, hit the ground, that caused the fumble.
Right.
They scoop and score. But refs had ruled fumble on the field, couldn't confirm that it, or didn't have enough evidence to overturn it. And so you have another Yeah, you know, defensive touchdown.
Yeah, and that was a killer at that point.
I think that the refs kind of set us back. You know, I'm not going to make complete excuses. We played terribly. But the refs didn't help us early on. And even the announcers said multiple times, like, that's – even on, like, the forward progress one, like, they were like, even that's, like, the quickest whistle I've ever seen on a forward progress
and
stopping.
SMU did get a lot of quick whistles on Saturday. And you're right. They beat us. You know, we got our butts kicked by SMU, right? It wasn't all on the shoulders of bad officiating. But going back to that fumble, Jordy, Nick, what did you guys see? Did you think he had regained control before he went down, or do you feel like it could have gone either way?
Yeah, I can go first. I mean, it's tough because, as you said, the ruling on the field, if there's not conclusive evidence, and it didn't look like from any of the camera angles that you could really overturn that.
Well, I'm surprised. You mean the CW camera angles were good enough to be able to figure that one out?
Yeah, the top-tier CW production over there couldn't get the angles right. But, no, yeah, I mean, obviously, it looked like he regained it. I think Hoover said post-game that he got the wind knocked out of him from the ball being under him until it hit the ground. So, obviously, if that happened, it would have been a thing. But that single play, I don't think really changes the outcome of the game, as we said.
It doesn't, because, I mean, the issue, though, is you go down 17-0, you have a punt return for a touchdown. The game got so fast out of our control that we had to play catch-up, and then you start overplaying, you start making turnovers because you're trying to do too much, and so you get more turnovers. Hoover threw his first interceptions of the season. Like, it just – was it downhill? It was an uphill battle the entire time after that. You
several
never really
interceptions
got
of the season. All
yeah, so, yeah, never got fully in control of being able to get back into the game, I don't think. It was a close game, like, right before half, but then they get a stop, touchdown, and then another field goal, and then you're down 20 points at half. And so,
yeah, it's very difficult to come back from a game like that.
It was just one of those days.
It really was. But Jordy, how about you? Was there something that you saw that was worth talking about positively about this game, or are you kind of in the same camp?
I think the only thing that I can think of is Jack Besh's season so far. I mean, continues to turn it on. And
yeah, so you stole mine. That was going to be the one thing I was going
to yeah, mention. I mean, he's just – it's refreshing to watch a guy like that play football. He's, you know, he's have to be one of the hardest working guys I've ever seen. You know, he's first one there, last one to leave every practice. And he just deserves it, deserves a good shot at it. And it's good to see him doing well. But, yeah, there's a lot of things that I want to say, but I'm sure we'll get to them.
All right, Nick, how about you?
Yeah, I think it's one of those games where you, Dyke said a post game with the team that you just have to flush it. Like everything that went wrong or that could have gone wrong did go wrong. Like you got punts returned for tutties, you got scoop and score, you got pick sixes. I think they had five turnovers and they hadn't turned the
head
ball over.
Head coach getting thrown out of the game.
Head coach getting thrown out. Yeah. So
I've never seen that before.
To be fair. I am shocked that that's, like, the first time that's happened to TCU in a while. With the way Coach Pete treated refs, this Coach Pete kicked refs out of scrimmages. Like, he was known for just being that guy to a ref, and we never had that issue.
I mean, I feel like most refs give a long leash to that second unnecessary, you know, whatever, unsportsmanlike conduct, to where it seemed crazy to give it in the moment. Obviously, you get the first one, and you expect him to really have to do something horrible. And Dykes has had a history of yelling at the refs, as we know. So,
yep.
I don't know if that hurt him there with the background of it.
Oh, I think it obviously.
I never even saw them throw the second flag. We had the first one, and to be fair, I actually think they threw the flag because of Coach Kaz. Not blaming him. So when you're watching the video, Coach Dykes is saying his things, you know, maybe not the most colorful or in a little bit colorful language.
Let's just say it wasn't very eloquent.
But he stops talking, the ref starts to walk away, and then Coach Kaz says something, and then the ref throws the flag. And so I think that he thought Dykes said what Coach Kaz said, and so I think that hurt us. Yeah, and then we run the next play, we get a first down, and then all of a sudden the refs are huddled up. They never showed a replay, never showed video, anything of it, and all of a sudden he's just kicked out of the game. And it was a long process, too, of, like, determining.
Yeah, it was a long walk.
Just send him off already. Like, I get it. Like, honestly, I was glad someone showed some fight, but, yeah.
Yeah, it was unfortunate that it had to come down to that. I don't know if this is just indicative of this particular team. It's just they just don't seem very disciplined right now. They don't seem disciplined on run defense. They don't seem disciplined in run blocking. They don't seem disciplined in a lot of different aspects of the game. And there's no doubt on the offensive side of the ball, Hoover can throw the ball. He has made huge strides in the offseason. We've seen a lot of good things out of Hoover and the wide receivers. I mean, you mentioned Beck and some of the other guys. Even Savion had a couple of really good moments in that game. And J.P. Richardson had some really good moments. Obviously, this unit can play ball, but it can't. The entire TCU football team cannot be Hoover and the wide receivers. It has to be more than just that. And when you get beat time in and time again with, you know, your run defense just cannot pick a lane, can't pick an angle, you're not disciplined to stay in those lanes, and you're going to get beat over and over and over again. And everybody else in the stadium knows exactly what's going to happen on every single play, and you're not able to stop it. I don't know what to do other than to point to coaching. So, I mean, you know, Jordy, Nathan, you guys have played on some great teams. So how do you feel? Do you feel that the big issue right now is with the coaching staff, or do you think it's personnel?
I think it's kind of hard to put your finger exactly on what it is. I think it's a combination of things. But I know, like, since I was at TCU, I played for 5 years, we've always had good run games. We've always been able to establish a run, and it's sort of open up the passing game for us. And this year, you know, it just hasn't been there. I think, you know, kind of like we've talked about, Hoove's kind of got to try to make magic happen every time he gets out there.
Hard place to be in if you're a quarterback.
Yeah, absolutely. And he's obviously going to make mistakes when he's doing that. He's trying to play the perfect game, and I don't think he can do much more than what he's doing right now. So I think a lot of it, you know, does come down to coaching, because at the end of the day, you know, they're the guys calling plays. But I think a lot of the responsibility has got to fall on the players as well. Whether they're not doing their job properly or missing assignments, it's pretty glaring, I think, on both sides of the ball. But yeah, not exactly sure what the issue is.
So Nathan, what about you? What's your grade for the coaching staff at this point?
Coaching staff C-. it's passing just enough in some aspects, but then, you know, you're ultimately not doing what you need to do to get done.
Well, you're scoring 42 points against SMU.
Yeah,
should be enough to win.
And so that's where I think our defense comes into play, because, you know, you score. You give up 21 points from offensive turnovers or a special teams error.
Right.
You take those out, that's still 45 points that you gave up on defense. And we saw last year with Colorado, you give up 45 points, you're going to lose. Yeah. Your offense can only do so much. I would love for offense to put up 60 points a game, but averaging 40 points a game is still really good. In
especially
today's,
without a run.
Yeah, without a run defense or a run game, which I think with that issue, I think this is our O-line. I don't think we've ever had a shortage of good running backs. I think we have some O-line issues, and so I think it also went into pass protection issues. I think Hoover gets hit a lot. You know, we don't see it, but after plays, Hoover has a lot of pressure on him, and that starts to build up on you as a quarterback. Your internal clock starts to speed up a little bit, and so that's when you see errant throws, getting the ball out too quickly, not letting your plays develop to get to the people who are going to be open.
Well, I tell you, with that one touchdown pass to McAllister,
yes.
He was wide open.
Yeah.
I was, because there was enough pressure getting to him real quickly, I was afraid he was going to overthrow McAllister because he got rid of it so quickly.
And he got hit, too.
And he got hit when he did
that. So, I think our O-line is our biggest offensive issue right now, whether it's just toughening it up or scheming better. I don't know. I guess time will tell. But defensively, I think it's a collection of both, like Jordy said, coaches and players collectively as a unit. I was going to talk with Shannon about this, but I think from what I saw, we had three down linemen again.
We kind of went back to a 3-4.
Yeah, so I know Shannon would love to talk about that, but that kind of scares me. It's like, are we going to stay in that? Because obviously
it's a family friendly show, so maybe it's best that Shannon's not here to talk
yes.
about it.
He's probably thinking about it right now, actually. But I don't know if we're making that change permanently, if that was a scheming thing for SMU because you had a mobile quarterback. But, again, I don't know. I hopefully it's not a permanent thing and we can switch back to that 4-3 and be able to get some pressure against the run, because,
right,
like you said, we cannot stop the run.
Well, I'm glad you brought that up, because going to that 4-3 defense and then sticking with it for the entire game, knowing it's not working, just goes back to some of the other critiques that we had of this defense, going back to the UCF game, even going all the way back to the Stanford game.
And last year.
Well, yeah, but you bring in a new defensive coordinator, and you're not making halftime adjustments, right? You're not making in-game adjustments. I mean, again, when everybody in the stands knows they're going to run the ball, and you're not making adjustments to stop that, right, then you've got a problem. I think we have a strong enough secondary that if we need to focus on just loading up the box and stopping the run, let those guys work. Let those guys do what those guys do best, right? Trust them. Yeah, they're going to get burned every now and then, but I'd rather that than, you know, having these guys break run after run after run.
Yeah, it's demoralizing for your defense.
It is.
And team in general, because you're selling out to stop the one thing that you can't stop, and you can't do it. And it ultimately, over the course of four quarters, it breaks you mentally. Yeah. So you see guys give up, lack of effort at the end of the game, and that's when you need it. Even if you are down, you still want to hopefully show some fight. But
so, yeah. Next question. How hot is Sonny's seat right now?
I don't think it's that hot.
You don't think so?
Yeah, no. I think it would take a – I think we would have to lose out for that seat to get pretty hot. There might be some questions, and obviously there's always going to be fans that immediately call for coaches' heads. That's just the nature of fans, unfortunately. But I think he's okay. Bryles, a little different.
Okay, well, you have offense that's putting points on the board. A lot of points on the board.
You do.
Yes, we don't have a run game, but the offense is producing.
But I think we go, and you saw us in the UCF game, we go stagnant at the worst times.
I agree.
And that's what I thought we kind of proved we were going to be, kind of get over against Stanford, was being able to go late in the fourth quarter, put a drive together, and do that. And we kind of did against UCF, but we had a false start at the one-yard line, which is accountability. But I don't think – ultimately, I don't think Dykes is going to get in the hot seat until probably next year. If it happens, hopefully it doesn't happen. I like Coach Dykes. But I think someone on Twitter, I can't remember who it is, does like a coach's like hot seat tracker. Yeah, yeah. The index. Unfortunately, the special teams guy is up there now.
Well, it's funny because he was actually demoted this past year to, I don't know, some sort of assistant to Coach Dyke, so he's not technically the special teams coach anymore. So, yeah, I did see that, though.
Yeah, if that question's done, I had a question for Jordy. What happened on the punt return? was it coverage?
First off, it was a bad punt. It was in the middle of the field. The hang time was fine. We got down there, but guys couldn't get off blocks.
Yeah, three guys whiffed right at the point of catch.
One was playing leapfrog.
I saw Marcel. I was trying to be Superman. That was
terrible. I love the effort, but keep your feet.
That was
instant meme right there.
That was I've seen memes about it all over X or Twitter or whatever you want to call it this week.
Yeah. Usually, when there's a punt return for a touchdown, is it usually due to out kicking coverage, or is it bad coverage? People not getting into their lanes.
Yeah, it's mostly like we always had. It was, you know, obviously coverage is super important, and as long as like the punter's kicking the ball where it's supposed to be, we should be able to cover it. Not sure if that punt was supposed to be across field. I think it was, and it sort of landed in the middle a little bit. But again, guys were there. Guys were ready to cover. So, and I mean, at the end of the day, Ethan's got to take responsibility for that because he didn't put the ball where it was supposed to go. Like we never punt the ball in the middle of the field. You just don't do that.
Okay, so for those who don't follow punting, where should that ball have been? Closer to the boundary line?
It looked like if he's kicking it cross field, it's got to be at a minimum. It's got to be outside the hash, and we're trying to get at least to the numbers on the opposite side of the field. He's definitely kicking cross just by the way guys release. They release to the left side, so that tells me that he's kicking left.
Right.
I actually haven't spoke to him about the punt because I'm not sure that he'd really want to talk about it. But, it's obviously, like, whenever we're punting, we're trying to kick it numbers and outside. That's, you know, that's the prime position. You're not going to get you're very unlucky if you get a return to the house from there. But, yeah, it's I think it's a combination, again, of the placement, probably the hang time and the bad coverage.
What if you know you have it's like a like Terps back there, someone like super speedy, like, is just a threat anytime they touch the ball.
Yeah, it's usually kick it away from them. I had a couple of buddies actually that played against Terp and guys that played against Rager and DD, and they always said that their game plan was to kick it to the other side of the field, and that's usually a pretty good rule of
thumb. I think is what LIU started doing, and then we put two people back there.
Yeah, which is smart. I think anytime you got a dynamic returner like that, especially in college, like they're there to make plays, and you gotta scheme things up to stop them from being able to return the ball. But I don't know. I think we've always had good returners too, and I think we have a good return game this year. It's really important in college football, and you know, a punt return is so deflating for an opposition team.
Yeah.
So.
No, I mean, up to that point, I think he has been great at punting. I think his hang time has been fantastic, and I think he, for most of the time, he puts the ball in a position where the return man can't really do anything, because by the time they get the ball, we're already down in coverage. We're already there to make the tackle. So. I kind of see that. It seemed like, I don't know what it was, maybe SMU just had a really good blocking scheme set up, because while there were guys down there, they weren't really in a position to really do anything once they actually...
They were holding a little bit too, but...
Well, okay, yes. There was.
I saw holding.
There was at least a few holds on that, but yeah. They
worse than our holding on that kicker turn.
Oh, that was true. That was, yes.
That's what got Dykes ejected.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, and that was pretty egregious. I mean, if you're not gonna call it one way, you shouldn't call it either.
Again,
way,
the
right?
announcer said it was soft. So,
right. Well, it's like the Stanford game, right? I mean, there were some things we got away with, but then there was the things that they let Stanford. So it was a very evenly called game, and I think everyone, even the announcers, appreciated that. I mean, if you're gonna call it one way, call it both ways that way. So it's a little difficult when you have a game like this and you're not getting those calls and the other team is. Definitely was some home cooking at the Hilltop on Saturday. So, yeah. All right. Well, you know, this game, obviously, absolutely just a gut punch for TCU fans coming into this game. Obviously, anytime you lose to SMU is a bad week. SMU was coming off of a bye. TCU coming off of that close loss to UCF the week before. Everything just kind of aligned into a perfect storm. But, you know, you got to pick yourself up. You got to move on. And this week we are going against Kansas at Arrowhead Stadium.
Hopefully.
Supposedly.
Maybe.
We'll see.
Yeah.
And if you don't know what we're talking about, there was a story that came out earlier today that 72 hours before the game was to begin, the University of Kansas had not yet reached an agreement with Arrowhead and the Kansas City Chiefs to be able to play the game at Arrowhead Stadium. So as of the recording, this is Thursday evening that we're recording this podcast, and it'll be released Friday morning. Hopefully, by the time this is released, we have the approval of the Kansas City Chiefs to be able to play at Arrowhead Stadium. I know that Nathan's looking forward to that.
Yeah, I enjoy this part of the job where we get to go see different stadiums.
Definitely.
Get to experience, especially NFL stadiums, because they just always have a different level of magnitude to them. I mean, SoFi, it was a beautiful stadium. Very stupid design, in my opinion. But
terrible design.
It was cool to see. It was cool to go down on the field, get to see that. Same thing with Arizona's. I think it's State Farm or something.
Yeah,
like that.
The Fiesta Bowl.
Yeah, where the Fiesta Bowl was. That was cool. Obviously, yeah, anytime you get to go into Jerry World, it's like an alien spaceship. So I'm excited to go check out Arrowhead. Haven't been there before, and get to see what all that's like.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to hear how your thoughts on the stadium experience when you come back next week. I was supposed to go. Unfortunately, I've got too many obligations tomorrow, so I can't be able to break away to be able to make it to the game. So I'll be running the game day forum.
I'll have some coffee
for
you.
So, well, thank you. I appreciate it. That'll be good. But let's talk about this game against Kansas. And what do you think – how do the Frogs bounce back from this loss? So, Jordy, what do you think the Frogs are going to be able to do on Saturday? What do they need to do in order to be able to get back in the win column?
I think I talked about it last week. I think I'm going to keep up on it. I think we need to be able to establish a run. And then, obviously, I think Kansas has a pretty strong running game, and most teams are going to try and run the ball against us now, given
a big threat from their quarterback, too.
Yeah, absolutely. given what we've shown so far, I'm sure every team's game planning to run the ball against us, just run it down our throat. And I think going up there, we've kind of got to wipe what happened last game. You know, credit to SMU, they came ready to play, but you know, every team's going to come ready to play. I think, yeah, I think we need to establish that run on offense, and that defense has got to start playing together. And yeah, I don't know. I'm optimistic about this weekend, but you know, I hope we can show something.
Well, Nathan, do you think we're going to finally get the run game going against Kansas?
I hope so, but I want to say yes. I want to say we're going to, and everything's going to go according to plan, because the most frustrating thing, and I was talking about this with my roommate, is while we were there, we never lost to SMU, never lost to Kansas. Those were just things you just didn't do.
Right.
But now it's like there's an uneasiness, and you don't like that because it's like you should be able to go in to just dominate this team. Like, even going back to SMU really quick, I watched their first three games. They did not look that good.
No, they didn't.
And then they had the best game ever. Like, just like they had so much energy. And that's just what happens when you get these rivalry games. I'm not saying that Kansas is a rivalry game, but anything can happen. You get these teams that are playing down, they're punching up, you land a blow, and then all of a sudden it turns into more blows, and champ is shocked. Not that we're a champ in any way. But
right.
I'm in order to bounce back fully and to rebuild confidence in people, I think you would need like a 30-point win against Kansas, which is doable if you get ahead and then, you know, offense is clicking, you establish a run. Honestly, at this point, I think we have to pass to establish the run. That's just how it looks for our offense at this point. Hopefully our passing game can just soften up their defense enough for our run to get established. It's not going to be the other way around from what I've seen.
More counters, more delays, things like that.
Yeah. Screens, stuff like that. Running back screens, not wide receiver screens, because I'm tired of those right now.
No more bubble screens, please.
But you do that, you get ahead, their offense now has to play from behind, you get a couple turnovers, and then this game can be within, hopefully, more than 21 points ahead.
Yeah, that's a good point. Nick, how about you? What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, it's just such a tough spot, because obviously we're coming off two bad losses, and Kansas coming off three losses where it was all one-score games, and they were preseason top 25 to come into the game, so it's not like Kansas is old Kansas. I mean, it looks like they're kind of going back to that, but they have Jalen Daniels, they have Devin Neal, and they have so much experience in playmakers, and it's another thing if you have a mobile quarterback. So it's the same script that you've played, you know, pretty much the majority of the season so far against mobile quarterbacks, where you're going to have to stop it, and they're going to run until you prove you can stop it. So I think Kansas is going to be fired up and ready because they're sick of this losing, you know, skid that they're on, and we should be too. So the spot is so interesting for both teams because you're down bad and both teams need a win so bad. So it's tough to predict what's going to happen. But I think the Kansas script is there when you know exactly what they're going to do. And I think they know what we're going to do. We're going to try to pass first. They're going to try to run first. So I don't know what to think of this game or what's going to happen, because it's just two teams that have underperformed.
Like you said, this is a hard game to predict, right?
Yeah.
You're right. Kansas has playmakers. But if you really kind of look at it, TCU should be able to win this game.
For sure.
May not be 30 points like Nathan said, but TCU should be able to win this game by a couple of scores at least.
Yeah.
But if Kansas has the type of game that SMU did, where everything goes right, they've got the playmakers to again kind of create
game. Yeah, they can. They're not old Kansas. They have a good quarterback now. They have a better offensive scheme than they used to have. It's not the same. And that's why it's one of those, like you said, it's hard to predict because you just don't know. You just don't know which team is going to show up.
Yeah. Literally anything.
Yeah, that's true.
I like their quarterback. He's good.
Yeah.
Thankfully, we knocked him out a lot.
I like Kansas. I do like Kansas. I like the quarterback. I like what they're doing, and I'm happy that they're doing it. But, this comes at probably the worst possible time for TCU, because if you go into Arrowhead and you come away with a third loss in the road to Kansas at that point, I don't know whether or not this team has the wherewithal to be able to recover for the season.
Yeah.
And I think this is kind of one of those pivotal moments. You're coming off this huge blowout against a rival. You're going against another team that Nathan said you've pretty much handled the entire time you've been in the Big 12. But you don't have your own stuff together at this point. So I think the key to this game is going to be the run game on both sides of the ball. If we can't get the run game established, and we haven't shown that we could, if we can't stop the run game, which we've shown we haven't been able to do that either, it's going to be a very, very long Saturday for the Frogs.
No, I think it's the swinging point of the season so far, where you know, like, this TCU team has the talent to be a great team, which is why it's so frustrating, I think, that we haven't been able to put that together. But, you know, like you said, if we lose this and go to 2-3, it really looks like it would be a downhill season. But if you go to Kansas, get a win, you get Houston at home and then a bye, and then you're looking at 4-2 heading into whatever it is. Obviously, that's looking too ahead, but I mean, this season, we're only 4 games in, and you can overreact because we've underperformed so far, but there's still a lot of time to bounce back, and this Kansas game is just going to set the tempo for the rest of the season.
Yeah, going into that bye, it's a good point. If you go into that bye 3-3, or even, heaven forbid, 2-4,
yeah,
right, losing to Kansas and Houston down the stretch,
there's a lot
going into the bye, like you said, I don't know how this team can bounce back from something like that. I haven't seen the discipline. I haven't seen the mental toughness from this team to be able to bounce back from something like that. So this is going to be a pivotal game, and it's going to be very interesting on what we're going to see. So normally we do predictions at the end, but we're going to do them now because we're going to switch gears after we talk Kansas and start talking a bit of basketball here with Nick. So before we jump into basketball, Jordy, what do you think the final score is going to be on Saturday?
I'm going to go TCU wins 35-31, but like I said, I think this game could go any number of about 4 different ways.
Well, that's a good prediction. We're still high on the Frogs, but close.
I'm optimistic, but like I said, I think we could blow them out. Think they could blow us out if we're off, and I think it could be. I think it's going to be a really close game, but I think either of those two things could happen as well.
All right, Nick, how about you?
Yeah, I don't think I can actually give a score prediction because I'm going with the team and working for them, so they tell me not to. But I think I can go anywhere, like I said.
Wink, wink, nudge, nudge. I'll edit it out later.
Do you think it's going to be a good game?
Yeah, no, yeah. I do think it'll be a good game because I think their secondary is good, but Hoover and Besh and Savion, our weapons have shown that we can have a successful passing game, I think, against any team in the country.
That was stacked.
Yeah.
I think Hoover's, what, third in passing yards?
Our passing offense is in the top 5 right now. Our red zone defense, I think, is in, like, the top 15. I mean, it's insane how much better we have gotten in certain aspects on offense and just absolutely nosedived. We're, like, 95th or something in rushing offense. Yeah. It's ridiculous.
We were, like, one.
I think it's lower than that.
We were, what, 116 last week?
Yeah, that wasn't counting SMU.
We were 116 last week. Before
it was
SMU.
116 last week. Okay. But I know last time I saw it, I think we were, like, in the upper 90s. But still,
yeah.
You know, at that point in time, you're splitting hairs, right? I mean, you're fighting with Wyoming for, you know, who has best rushing offense.
Either way, it's not good enough.
I think
it's definitely not.
Yeah, I think an underrated part of that that doesn't get recognized as much is that you lose a guy in Coach Jones last year who kind of out of nowhere who recruited these guys. So to be put in, it's just with new coaches, there's always going to be a transition period. And when you're with a guy that doesn't recruit you, I think it's going to take a little bit longer. And Coach Jones is a guy who's produced NFL running backs year after year from his Memphis days with Antonio Gibson and Tony Pollard, and then with Kendre DeMercado and even Imani last year. Like, he's a stud. So I think just that transition period is taking
a little bit of
time.
For sure.
Yeah.
Right. But so, that's a huge missing piece at this point. But I don't know how much of that, of what we're seeing, like not being able to create holes, not actually.
Yeah, for sure.
I mean, there's a lot more that goes into it than that running back room.
I just checked. We're 120th in the country.
120th. Okay, we're going the wrong direction, folks.
We're going to move on from that topic.
We are. All right. So
I'm
going to
bring some optimism in here. We're going to say 45-32 TCU. It's going to be a close game. I think we run away at the end. Fourth quarter, we get 2 touchdowns back-to-back and kind of put them out.
Throwing touchdowns or rushing?
Throw to the 2, Cam finishes it off. No false starts.
No false starts. That would be fantastic. I'm kind of in the same vein. I'm thinking 42-34. TCU, I think we've shown that we could score 40 points a game pretty consistently. So I'm pretty happy with saying that the offense is going to be able to score 40. Whether or not they're going to be able to score more than that is going to be dependent on whether or not we can actually get the run game going. If we get the run game going, I think this offense can easily score in the 50s. And it's going to be a really good game. Now, the question is going to be whether or not the defense is going to be able to come up with the stops,
yeah,
especially down the stretch, to be able to give the offense the time to be able to do that. And whether or not, as we were talking about before, you know, Hoover's getting hit. Hoover's taking a beating throughout this first half of the season. If Hoover continues down this path, we're in trouble, because right now him and the receivers are the only production that we've actually got on this team. So hopefully they can do it again, 40-something points, but hopefully the defense is able to actually, you know, stay in their lanes, get the stops, make some adjustments when they're needed, and play a good game. But I'm with you, Nathan. I think it's going to be a close game down the stretch, but hopefully the Frogs can leg it out.
Is Haas cleared yet? Do you know?
He unwrapped. He wasn't in the boot or whatever he had.
He was active against SMU,
He was active, yeah, right. Okay. Yeah, so we may see him in a couple of packages.
Okay.
But I don't know. I imagine
I'm just curious, because if it goes down the path of Hoover taking too much of a beat.
Right,
yeah,
but we definitely have, you know, Seals and Haas. I think there's definitely some backups there that can be helpful. But I don't want Hoover to go down. At the same time, I don't think you're going to put in a backup quarterback against SMU with the score the way it was, when it started off. You start down 17-0. I don't think you're going to see those packages. I think we will see some of those packages against Kansas. Yeah. May see him in the first quarter. So that'll be a fun thing to kind of watch for and see what actually happens at that point in the game. But, yeah, it's going to be an interesting game. Hopefully TCU comes away with a win. But we're going to pivot now and talk about something a little bit happier. So, Nick, talk to us about basketball. The season schedules came out today for men's and women's.
Yeah, it's an exciting time.
Is this a murderer's row of the Big 12 basketball season or what?
Yeah, I think it's as tough as a basketball conference as we've had here. Obviously, I mean, Big 12's been the consensus best basketball conference in the nation for, I don't know, the past 5-10 years, it seems like. And they just got better, adding, obviously, Arizona and Arizona State, Colorado, you know, Utah, too. But, yeah, it's a murderer's row.
Are you at Gonzaga yet?
No. I think they're going Pac-12, maybe. There's some conference realignment stuff there. But, it's an exciting time. Obviously, TCU basketball has been super exciting as of recent, as we've taken kind of the jump to being, you know, three straight NCAA tournaments for the first time ever. Tournament wins for the first time since Dixon was a player. So we've gotten to a level that I think is exciting for TCU fans, and we've evolved with the transfer portal well. And this past year we brought in our number one recruiting class of all time, and we just got the number three recruit of all time to start off the 2025 class. So there's a lot to look up for basketball and women's basketball too. I mean, we just brought in probably the top transfer class in the nation, you know, Haley Van Lith, Maddie Scherr, and you still have a lot of talent there. So it's an exciting time for basketball in Fort Worth, especially if you're looking something.
I think a lot of Frog fans, talking about women's basketball, I think a lot of Frog fans were kind of surprised about the turn of events that happened last season with women's basketball. So how can fans kind of expect a different look this season with women's basketball?
Yeah, I mean, what happened last year was a once-in-a-lifetime thing with all those injuries at the same time.
Talk about perfect storm, right?
Yeah, exactly. But I think Mark Campbell just showed that he's a home run hire. So many players have come in, top-tier transfers and top-tier recruits, that have showed how much they trust him and enjoy his coaching style to pull a Haley Van Lith, who's one of the top players in the country, to pull a Maddie Scherr, to pull Sedona here. Jade Nowens last year, like, these are top-level talents that, you know, are big off the court and on the court. And I think when they put it together last year, they got off to, I think, the best start. I think they were undefeated going into conference play.
Yeah, they were fantastic.
Yeah, so if those injuries didn't happen, you don't know what's going to happen. And hopefully this year, I mean, probably not, but knock on wood, that it doesn't happen again. But I think there's a lot of success in the future, and I think they can make a push at an NCAA tournament bid and possibly the Big 12 title.
Yeah, so do you think we're going to end up with 4 NCAA visits by the men and then an NCAA showing by the women?
Yeah, I think it's so tough to look at the men's team because it's a completely different team. I mean, you
huge amount of turnover.
Yeah. The only player who played minutes that coming back is Ernest Uday, who's the big man, the Kansas transfer from last year. So you just don't know. Like, you bring in, you lose all your guards, you lose Emmanuel Miller, who's your leader, and you're kind of looking for a guy to take that leadership role. You brought in a lot of veteran transfers, like Frankie Collins, who's going to run the point from Arizona State. You got a guy from UNC Wilmington, Trezarian White, who averaged 20-plus last year. You got a guy from Green Bay who averaged 20-plus, and Noah Reynolds, and you just stack transfers on transfers where the majority of your rotation is going to be transfers. And then it'll be exciting, too, because I think some of these true freshmen who are such high recruits are going to finally get minutes. And we haven't seen a true freshman get minutes under Jamie Dixon since Mike Miles, really. So I think you look
really?
At... Yeah, you look at a guy like Micah Robinson and a guy like David Punch, you could get minutes right off the bat. So it's going to be interesting because I think they could make a tournament push. Obviously, that's kind of the standard at this point, is fans even want more than a tournament push to make that second weekend. So it'll be interesting to see what the teams look like. I think you'll find out a lot more after that first, you know, month or so of games to see where you're exactly riding. And they have an exciting exhibition at against Arkansas at Dickey's to start the year against that new Calipari team. So there's a lot of talent there where they could easily do it, but just getting those guys to mesh is going to be interesting to see how it looks.
What would you say is your – what non-conference game are you looking forward to most?
We go at Michigan November 15th to start the year. And I think it's interesting because we didn't have a real test until like a month into the season last year. And I think that was a big gripe from Frog fans, is that you want to see the non-conference being pushed a little bit more. So 2 weeks into the season, you're going on a true road game to Michigan and to see how that goes. And you're also hosting Xavier, which is important. They made an effort this year to bolster the non-conference because Oklahoma showed that even if you finish with a 500 record in Big 12 play, it's instantly got you in before. It doesn't. And having a strong non-con where you can look at a certain non-con game as a win that you can, you know, post on a resume and be that piece that gets you in on Selection Sunday, I think is massive. So I'm excited for the non-con this year. They definitely made a point to make it better. And I think that Michigan game 2 weeks in is going to be exciting.
Yeah, it seems like it's very front-loaded this time around.
Yeah. For sure. I think balance, too. Because the thing with the Big 12 schedule is that you don't need a loaded non-con. But you just need enough to where if you struggle a little bit in conference play, it gives you that extra bump later in the year. So I'm excited to see what they're going to do, and they're getting right into it right away. So we'll see.
And what about the women's schedule?
Yeah, they have even a tougher non-con. I think they play NC State, and they play South Carolina. And we know South Carolina won Natty last year. So Markham was obviously confident in his team if he's scheduling these type of games. And obviously that Big 12, too, we know is probably the top conference in women's basketball as well. So they have a loaded schedule, probably even loaded than the men's in non-con. And yeah, I think the confidence shown when you take that strong of a schedule shows that he's confident in his team and they have all the talent in the world to get it done.
Well, it's going to be an exciting season. We're looking forward to it. Podcast again this season, right?
Yes. It's called Frog Fever. It'll be out on the Killer Frog Networks and all that stuff. And if you follow me on Twitter at JeremontiNicky, I post all the basketball stuff there. So I'm excited to cover the team again this year, and I appreciate you guys having me on.
Yeah, no, thanks for coming on. Thanks for talking football. Suffering through the football talk. Appreciate that.
No, it's an interesting spot right
excited.
Now.
We're excited for basketball. We're excited to actually follow you throughout the season. You've been fantastic covering
both
men's and women's. And we're going to have you back on in the future once we get closer to basketball season.
Yeah, that'd be
awesome.
And
talk a bit about that. Hopefully there's more positive football talk next time you're on.
I think there will. I mean, this team does have, like, the talent. I mean, they're top in the Big 12 and all the rankings and stuff like that, and in the future as well. So I think it'll figure itself out. You know, it's obviously looking down right now, but I'm optimistic about the future with Hoover being just a sophomore and all these weapons we have. So
yeah, and that's a good point. And we do have a pretty good recruiting class that does need to be, you know, grow them up, as Coach B used to always say. And I think it's going to be interesting to see the future of this particular team. Well, guys, how are we feeling?
Like I said, not as bad as last week. I just think it's going to be a very long fall for me.
See, I know, like, after the game, you went to, like, an Oktoberfest.
I did go to Oktoberfest. I actually left, and I hate to say this, I left a quarter early. After one point, I was just
so
like,
"So it's
I'm
your fault."
100%. I'll take one.
We would have came back.
I know. I got to the point where I was like, "I'm done. I'm ready to go. Like, let's go Oktoberfest. Have a good time." Cowboys play tonight, so that'll determine how I go into the weekend.
Yeah, thank goodness we didn't have to deal with the Cowboys game on top of everything else. But yeah, it'll be interesting to see how things play tonight.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's all I have to say.
Jordy?
That's all I have to say.
How do you feel about the team going into this Saturday?
Yeah, I think we're going to handle ourselves really well. We'll go up there and get the dub and season's back on track, and yeah, we'll be fine.
All right. Well, we'll end on an optimistic note.
Let's go.
And it's one I was hoping we'd start off the podcast with, but I finally got it at the very end. So we are at the end of the podcast. I want to thank everybody who's out there listening to us. Of course, you can find the Killer Frogs podcast in all the major podcast networks. We're, of course, on Spotify and Amazon Podcasts, as well as Apple Podcasts. And, of course, you can go to killerfrogs.com. Go ahead and sign up for a free account. You know, go ahead and post in the prediction thread. Tell us what you think. How do you think the Frogs are going to play? And Arrowhead, hopefully it's Arrowhead, on Saturday.
And, Hooverhead.
Let us know. Yeah, let us know what you think the final score is going to be. And, of course, with that, we have come to the end of the podcast. It's the time we all get our frogs up and we get to say,
Go Frogs.
Boy, that was terrible. Let's do that again. There we go. One, two, three.
Go Frogs.
There we go.